Hey, you're listening to Fanboy Strike Back, Weekly Review Podcast, Episode 8.
Who strike back. Each week we pick our top comics of the week and give a review on them and what we thought. And also we are bringing you a top five this week of our top five best TV shows that are currently on the air. And also we're going to give a brief discussion about the new Harry Potter book, the big book. I'm sure some of you are waiting in line at midnight along with David. So
yes, I've been reading it nonstop for the past 3 days.
We're going to be talking about that a little bit. So David's pick this week was Ultimate Spider-Man 111.
Yes, Ultimate Spider-Man number 111, and anyone who has been listening to this show knows that this was pretty much a no-brainer pick for me, because this was Mark Bagley's last issue on Ultimate Spider-Man. And like I said about Bendis and Ultimate Spider-Man, I think he is the Spider-Man writer, and what I love about this book is that I don't buy this book for Spider-Man, I buy this book for Peter Parker. And that's basically all this issue was. It was the aftermath and the fallout of the Clone Saga, and it was just Peter telling Aunt May that he was Spider-Man, what she found out, and them talking about every single facet of that. So it's like one of those things where, for a normal writer, it probably would have been like maybe four panels, but for Bendis, it's an entire issue. And whether you hate that or you love it, you know, that's how you feel about Bendis, but I love it. And, what's that?
Okay. Oh, I was going to say, this was really good. When I started reading the book, at the beginning and read through the first couple arcs, and then just, I didn't read any further. But this was nice because I could come in after not reading it for a couple years and not miss a beat. Like, it was just Peter discussing with Aunt May about his life as Spider-Man. And you're right, it was just really in-depth, and just the genuine kind of emotion between the two of them was really, really well done. I think it was way better than the kind of same scene that they did in Spider-Man 2.
Right, because that's basically what this is. This is basically the scene from Spider-Man 2 in which Peter comes clean, and they talk about how he was responsible for Ben's death, and Aunt May is questioning everything about Spider-Man, how dangerous is it. But it was just like, this is what that scene really was. Like, Spider-Man 2 was the movie version, like I said, for a normal writer or anyone, it was that, you know, 1 minute scene. But this was a whole issue. And it takes me back to what my favorite issue of Ultimate Spider-Man is, was issue 13. And all that is an issue where Peter reveals his identity to Mary Jane. And so I just love how this book is not about, it is about the superhero aspects of the book, but it's about these characters that you love. And Bagley, I love Bagley. You can tell that he took a lot more time on this issue, and the inks and the colors, everyone took a lot more time. And it really looked like they were trying to give him, a grand hurrah, a nice farewell, and the guy just deserves it, because he does just a brilliant job in this book.
What did you think about the Stuart Immonen?
You know, I'm not going to say anything, because Mark Bagley is my favorite Spider-Man artist. So, no matter who took over this book, I was, you know, going to have a little bad taste in my mouth. But I'm totally open to it, you know. I think if Bagley wants to move on, then it's time. He had a great run. And I'm looking forward to, this new guy, Stewart, and what he's going to bring. You know, I'm thinking that big role to fill. But, you know, I trust Bendis and I trust what Marvel's doing, and I think that they're really going to take their time in choosing the person, especially because, you know, it was such a big deal that Bagley's leaving this book because they did break the record.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be different no matter who came in to do the artist, you know, the pencils on this. But it wasn't bad, it was just different. And I think with time, you know, he'll develop his own style, and it'll be just as accepted, I think, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to definitely be an adjustment, but it's cool. And, like, what they did is that they had Peter and Aunt May talking in the beginning, and then Peter and Aunt May talking in the end. And in the middle, they had Imonen. He drew a little arc where it's Peter fighting against his villain. And the funny thing is that I know I've seen this villain before somewhere, but I don't know where. I don't know if he's an old Spider-Man villain, but I think he also might be a villain from the MTV animated series that Bendis wrote. So I'm not sure about that, but I thought that was really weird. But the cool thing about the middle story is that they're talking about Roxxon Industries, and that's something that Bendis has been building up for a while, and it's really starting to build up some steam, so that looks like that's really going to be involved in the next, you know, ongoing arc, so I'm really excited to see that.
I was kind of excited to hear Peter talk about something big coming on the horizon, how before there wasn't any super-powered people on the planet, and then all of a sudden there was a lot. And he said, you know, it just seems like something might be coming where they'll all be needed. So I was like, ooh, that's a cool little foreshadowing.
Yeah. Okay, so what would have been your book of the week?
Really, I thought All Flash was going to be the pick of the week. But, and I'm going to talk about that later. That was good. But the book that blew me away was Justice League of America number 11.
See, I knew that we were going to have a different stance on this book.
Yeah, and I could see this being a polarizing book. Like, it's not a very, it doesn't feel like a team book. It just feels more like a story from a single issue of a single hero book.
Right.
But I just thought, first of all, Gene Ha, who did the pencils on this, amazing artwork. Like, it felt claustrophobic as I was reading this. And basically the gist of the story is there's a building has fallen during a rescue operation, and Red Arrow and Vixen got trapped underneath it. And so they're in this confined space, and they're also underwater. The building went underwater, and so it's them trying to get out. And they're beaten, they're broken, you know, they're just trying to find their way out before they either get crushed or suffocated or drowned, and it's just really intense. And the way it was drawn was claustrophobic. It was, you felt like art, you were in there with them.
The art was really, really good. I'll give you that. The art was well done.
And this is what I wish Meltzer had done, like, on the rest of the series. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of people to, you know, you didn't get caught up in all different kinds of word balloons or caption boxes or anything like that. Right. It was a more personal story, just involving just a few characters. And this, I was kind of surprised with just a one-shot, but Meltzer, I thought, really shined on this. And I'm such a huge fan of Roy Harper that I really enjoyed the dialogue about him talking about having a picture of Leon in his...
Yeah.
And his bow and everything like that. I mean, I thought it was a really well done book.
I didn't like this book at all. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what. I don't know
what else to say. I thought that, okay.
You don't like Meltzer, though, do you? Like, you're not a big fan of his.
I'm not a huge fan of Meltzer, no.
And I think he's kind of an acquired taste. I think you either really do like him or you're turned off by him.
Maybe. I don't know. I thought Identity Crisis was okay. And then I thought the thing about this story is that they're trapped underneath this building, and all this stuff happens, and it's great character interaction, and you find out stuff about Vixen, how she can't absorb or use the powers of animals anymore, but that she's been leeching off of the powers of other heroes.
Yeah, which I don't quite understand, like, how she just lost her powers, but...
She's talking about in the very beginning how... When she was with the birds,
she
and she was
birds,
yeah, that was really weird. I think the worst thing that he could have done was gone back to that, because everyone kind of laughed at that whole part. But
yeah,
that's besides the point. So at the very end, you find out that everything was reversed, and that basically they thought that the building was on top of them, they thought that there was the building and then water on top of them. And they found out that it was just a building, so all they had to do was just swim across. And it was... I didn't care about this book at all. I didn't care. I mean, honestly, I'm a big fan of Roy, too. And Roy could have died in this, and I would have been like, alright, that's fine.
Well, then you don't really care about the character, then, do you?
That's not true, because there has to be... I don't know, like, for this to be a standalone issue...
Book, he had, like, glass in his hand. He looked bad. He was in bad shape.
Right, but maybe it was just how the whole book was set and that it didn't appeal to me, because I don't like the whole, I don't know what happened before, I don't know what happens after. You know, I hate the, I'm going to pick up right in the middle. Plus, it just kind of, it irks me because, like, Meltzer's on a 12-issue run, and honestly, when this 12-issue run is over, I will not remember any of it, because it was, like, there was nothing that happened.
They brought Wally back.
But he's not even addressing that. Yeah. It's just like, okay, you had the Red Tornado stuff. I'm not going to remember that. Solomon Grundy.
Yeah. Well,
okay. I'm going to try my hardest to forget most of the Lightning Saga. Wally comes back, and Mark Waid addresses that, which is probably a good thing in All Flash, but we'll get to. But then we have this issue, and then he's going to end with something else, which is probably going to be another one-shot.
It's just another one-shot, yeah.
And I'm just kind of like, I didn't really care. I'm sure that I'm probably the minority in thinking that in this issue, but... That was my take.
I can see your point as far as not knowing what happened before and after. I don't think that's a relevant part of the story that you need to know that, but I can see that being a deterrent, so...
I did like the character interaction. I loved the stuff that you talked about with Roy and Leon and how, especially how Vixen was losing it, and Roy was the one that just kept her going.
Yeah. Now, see, I love that kind of just personal dialogue. It doesn't need to be big fights and everything like that all the time. Like, they could do this 12 more issues and I would be happy.
Right. Well, let's go on to All Flash number one.
Yes. Mark Waid writing The Flash again was awesome.
It wasn't bad.
I loved this book. And I'm going to say now, I said before that I liked Acuna's art in Green Lantern. I'm not sure if he's going to be cut out for this book, just judging from the last couple of pages where it revealed kind of what's in store for the future.
Right.
I'm not terribly thrilled about that.
Really? I liked his art in Flash better than I liked it in Green Lantern.
Yeah, not me. But Kershaw's art, God, I wish Kershaw was drawing this book. I thought he was fantastic.
So do we even know who's writing who's going to be drawing the main series?
Acuna's going to be drawing.
Is it Acuna? Okay.
Yeah. But this issue basically picks up where the last series left off. Was Wally is back now, and kind of a darker tone for a Flash book. He's hunting down, his first thing about being back is he's hunting down Bart's killer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he finds that, and it kind of shows the grief that he's going through, and he talks about Bart, how at first he really didn't care for Bart, he was more annoyed by Bart, which I think was a lot of people's reaction, but then he talked about as Bart grew up and went through different phases where he was tested and tried as a hero, and he grew into being a hero, and Wally really came to respect and like him, and then all of a sudden he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of difficult to see Wally having to deal with this killer who basically looks exactly like Bart.
Right, because he's a clone.
This is, you know, and Bart was his little cousin. So, I mean, it was really kind of cool to see that. It was a darker story for Wally, because usually he's a pretty lighthearted character. Which I don't know if they're going to change now that he's a father, if he's going to be a little bit more serious. But,
well, that was kind of what Iris was getting at him at the end, was that he needs to be less serious and stop thinking all the time.
Which I hope so, because that was Wally's biggest thing, was he was always kind of the class clown, which really made me like the character. But another thing that was really interesting was we learned that there was a connection between Wally coming back and why Bart couldn't access the Speed Force before he died.
Yeah, that was a pretty big deal. Yeah, so we basically find out that Wally is responsible somewhat for Bart's death. Because Wally coming back, he took all the power from the Speed Force. Therefore, Bart couldn't access it, and that's why Bart couldn't use his powers.
Yeah, he couldn't heal or anything like that. And really, like, Wally didn't have any say in the matter. He didn't choose.
Oh, definitely not.
He couldn't control what he did, you know. He couldn't control mainlining the Speed Force, which is what he's doing now. He's basically, like, taking all of it into himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting revelation, and I think that's going to be a factor that is going to play out in the future in his character development. But it's just nice to have Wally back as the Flash.
Well, talk about a dark turn. Let's talk about what he did to Inertia.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Instead of killing him, he made him immobile. He put him into kind of a suspended animation state and put him in the Flash Museum as a statue right in front of the Bart Allen exhibit. So he's staring at the man that he'll never become, which is how they, and that was pretty intense. Like, that's pretty horrible.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal, but I kind of like seeing it.
No, it was good.
Do we want to talk about the pages that Acuna, I'm not sure if it's Acuna or Acuna, that he drew, and the little scenes that we're getting? Because some of the stuff's a little weird.
It is. Can I say the weirdest thing about it, and it weirds me out, and I don't know why, is Wally's son as a kid with these huge muscles?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's just the way it's drawn or what, but I don't get it. Like, apparently these kids have superpowers. And
yeah, it looks like one of them's a speedster, one of them has super strength, but then we see someone with, it looks like a flash ring, but the Batman suit's coming out of it.
Yeah, so I don't know what that's about. I'm kind of, like, I'm intrigued. It's doing what it needs to do as far as getting me interested in what's going to be happening in the future of this book.
And, I mean, look, Mark Waid's writing it, so
Mark Waid,
you know, it's going to be pretty good.
I know Geoff Johns did a great job on the book, but Mark Waid was writing it when I was really, really into reading the Flash book back in the 90s.
Yeah, me too. He's the one who got me started on the Flash, yeah.
Yeah, and he did Impulse and everything like that, and he was great. He is great. He's a fantastic writer. So I'm excited. I'm on board. I thought this was a really good book.
Yeah, I feel a lot better about the whole Bart thing. Obviously, you know, I had a bad taste in my mouth about them killing Bart, and especially how they handled it afterwards, but you know, like, you can't go wrong with Mark Waid, like we said, writing The Flash, so it's going to be cool.
Another book this week is Avengers The Initiative number 4.
Yes, this book, I don't understand how it's this good, because I just thought it would be the worst book ever.
I expected really not to like this, because I was against anything initiative-wise. I was kind of sick of it, and I was sick of Tony Stark's side. But I love this book.
This book is awesome. Just so good.
It reminds me really of, like, a Teen Titans type book where they don't want to be there. Like, these are kids who use their superpowers on their own, like kind of how Peter Parker did in his early days. But instead, they had to register. It's like they had these powers, and their punishment was to go to boot camp. And so it was really good. And in this one, you see what's his name, Hardball, and he's been kind of tricked, or not tricked, but I guess blackmailed into doing a certain secret operative type of job.
They want him to steal the nanites from Tony Stark, and they're using some kind of secret of his powers against him.
Yeah.
The secret of how he got his powers, I guess.
It turns out that's why Tony Stark couldn't defeat the Hulk in World War Hulk.
Yes, and that's something that happened, because I'm not sure if this book should have come out before, but in the issue 1 of World War Hulk, Tony Stark uses the nanite and he stabs a Hulk, and nothing happens. And you're like, well, that worked on She-Hulk, it should have worked on Bruce. And then in this issue, we found out why. So that was really cool. You know, I'm a big fan of continuity, so.
Yeah, no, that was a great use of continuity. And I kind of thought about that after I read it. I was like, well, shouldn't this have at least come out in the week before, you know, during that book? But, you know, really, it worked okay. It kind of made it more like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool.
Right.
So, yeah, that was fine. But I love the book.
And then we had, they went to the MVP's kid's house, and apparently he was there. And that was pretty,
I forgot all
that. That
was
pretty weird.
Yeah, that was really strange.
Because he's the kid that everyone was kind of talking about when they first read this book, and they're like, you know, there's this MVP character, you thought he was going to be kind of the new Captain America, and somehow within like an issue, they really got you to feel for the character, and then they killed him off.
Well,
did
you notice another weird thing? I don't know if it was MVP or not, but when Hardball was sneaking around the facility in the beginning, and he found that body?
Right, and it was MVP's body, and they were doing testing on it.
Yeah. So
you're not sure if they're cloning him or what's going on. But this is a World War Hulk tie-in, and so at the very, very end, you see that they're about to fight the Hulk and all the Hulk's little cronies. But this book is just like, it's a fun, like, you know, it's a fun book. It's awesome.
It really is. I was kind of hesitant because I'm not thrilled about it being a tie-in to World War Hulk.
Right.
But it was fun. Like, I totally went with it, and it was great. So can't complain about it.
Okay.
So what else this week?
I actually have an indie pick this week.
Really? What'd you pick up?
I have a little story to go with it. It's going to come afterwards, but I picked up Zero Killer number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. Okay, so this is Zero Killer number one. It's written by Arvid Nelson, and the art is by Matt Camp. And it's a post-apocalyptic world where basically in the 70s, a nuclear war started. And so now there's a fallout, and I guess, like, I think they said maybe 90% of all humans died, something like that. And it's just basically this weird, it takes place in New York, the water level has risen, and you have this girl who's about to be attacked by these gangs of people called the Black Cats. They have a big black cat tattoo on their chest, and this guy helps her, and his name ends up being Zero. And no superpowers or anything, he just kind of beats the guys up, and then he takes this girl to see the leader of the Black Cats, I forgot her name. But the whole thing about this book is the guy, Matt Camp, who did the art in this book is absolutely beautiful, especially the lighting, because most of the book takes place at almost twilight, so the sun setting and everything, it's just gorgeous. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this book is because I was in a random comic book store just talking with the guy who's working there. And I was kind of like, yeah, you know, me and my friend, we do a podcast. And he's like, oh, well, I'm an editor for Dark Horse. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. He's like, you know, one of my books is coming out next week. You should check it out. And I'm like, all right. And so I checked it out, and it was great. And so this is exactly, like, why we're doing this, you know, to kind of get our voice out there, to also get, you know, exposed to stuff, because there's no way I ever would have read this before. So I'm really happy, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's really cool to have that pay off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now that you mentioned it, I'll have to go out and pick that up.
Yeah, so it's called Zero Killer. Not much happened in the first issue. It was just kind of setting it up, but it's kind of a book that I normally wouldn't like, but it's not so much a book that I wouldn't really like. It's just a book that I wouldn't go for because I wouldn't have a reason to. I never would have heard about it. So if you see it, check it out. It's really good. The art is amazing.
Okay.
So any other books from you?
I'm just going to make a few quick recommendations this week without going into too much detail. Captain America number 28.
That was great. Maybe. And the thing about this, the Red Skull daughter is kind of hot.
She is kind of hot. And it was hard because she's just going through and just slaughtering these people. But she's kind of cute. But I didn't enjoy this as much as I have been enjoying the book lately. And I think mostly just because it focused on her and I just wasn't as emotionally involved with her as I was like with Winter Soldier. So, but you know, the book is still good and I'm sure it's going to get back to being as good as it was.
Right.
Robin number 164 was good. It's setting up basically a feud between Robin and this superhero wannabe kid named Dodge, where he wanted to be kind of Robin's sidekick, and Robin spurned him and told him to go home, and kind of an accident ensued where Dodge ended up in the hospital and Robin felt really guilty about it. Well, this kid woke up, he's got a grudge now against Robin. He does have some kind of teleportation superpowers, and he's recruiting a gang of like C-list level thugs to take on Robin. And basically the whole book was just recruiting, and at the end the showdown begins, and so I'm kind of excited for the next issue more. And then Catwoman number 69, Will Pfeiffer wrote this really good book. It had a really touching scene in it where Bruce makes his first visit to Selina after she's had her baby, and he sees the baby for the first time, and it had some really nice moments between Bruce and Selina. And it had a really funny moment with them taking the baby in the Batmobile, and there was actually a child seat in the Batmobile, which I thought was funny.
Come on, Eric.
It was funny. It was well done. So.
All right. But, I was going to ask you about that, because I've never, after Hush, I didn't know what happened between those two.
Nothing really. They have gone back and forth with each other since Hush, because there was a bit of a thing after Identity Crisis where Selina had found out that they'd messed with her mind, as she was used to be a villain,
right.
and now she's not. And she went to Bruce asking for answers, and Bruce kind of said, well, you know, no matter what they did to you, you are in control of your actions now, and you still work like this, and this is who you are, and you're happy this way. So they still have some interaction, which I love these two together. So once in a while we get that, and Will Pfeiffer does a great job on that book. So
I guess one last thing was that World War Hulk number 2 came out, and it's more of the same, big fighting, pretty cool. John Romita Jr. is doing the art, so it's a really classic style, but it's cool to check out. Nothing big, just cool fights.
Typical summer action-y comic.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to make a quick recommendation. A trade paperback I just took with me on vacation and read on the plane. Phonogram by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. This was a great trade. It originally came out last year, I believe, but it's basically set up as a music pop culture book in Britain, and a guy is basically given a task by, there's these different gods of music, and this guy is given a task to find out what's happened to one of them. And it's really kind of interesting. It's kind of confusing at first, but the more you go along with it, the more you kind of get drawn into the mystery behind it. And the way it plays with the different types of music, and there's a lot of reference, and it really kind of made me go out. I actually bought a couple albums after this, and there's a great little index in the back that talks about all the bands that they talk about.
And oh, that's cool.
It really kind of adds some emotional depth to a lot of the bands that came out in the early 90s kind of Britpop wave. Oasis and Blur, in America, that was pretty much the ones that we got. But there was so much more that happened at that time. And, some of them I heard about and some of them I had albums of, but a lot of them I didn't. And so this kind of made me want to go back and revisit a lot of that. And it kind of gives you the appreciation of music. Like, you can really tell that the author had a lot invested in this book. So it was really good. And so anyone who hasn't checked it out, it's out in trade. So pick it up.
What's it called again?
Phonogram.
Phonogram. Okay. Cool. I haven't heard of it. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I am going to do a very short review of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. There are going to be a lot of spoilers here, so you might want to turn this off or mute it, or if you got the book then, I'm sure you've finished it by now, and if you didn't get the book then, you probably don't care. But I hated Harry Potter with like a fiery vengeance up until about maybe 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago. I have a really, really big pet peeve with British accents, and especially little kids with British accents. It drives me nuts. And so I never read a Harry Potter book or watched any of the movies, but the whole concept, just the fact that I knew it had to do with little British kids, kind of, set me off. And that really doesn't make me sound that nice of a guy, but it's true. And I was sick one weekend, and all the movies were on TV. So I was like, okay, I'll try watching these. And I ended up watching all four of the films. And later that day, I went out and bought the fifth book. And so I did it all not in order, but I watched the four movies, I read the fifth book, I read the sixth book, and then I went back and read the first through fourth book. And so I was definitely caught up. And so I was pretty excited for the seventh book. And the thing I was so surprised about Harry Potter is that these books are not for kids. If you're a parent and if you're reading these books to your kids, that's I want to read these to my kids. I can barely handle these books, and I'm 25. They're very, very mature, which I was really happy to hear, because they're great books, but they've always seemed like they're aimed more towards kids, and I guess that's not the case, because every year in the books, Harry grows a year, and they always show that, and he progresses, and so it would be really cool if, you start off as a kid reading these books, 10 years ago, because they grow along with you, like a lot of cartoons and stuff did with us, and definitely comics did that with us. But basically what happened at the end of the sixth book is that you find out that there's these things called Horcruxes, I think they're pronounced, and they're basically Voldemort, he who must not be named, is splitting his soul, and so that way he can never die. And Dumbledore, who is Harry's mentor, he tells Harry that he needs to hunt down all these Horcruxes, and he has to destroy them before he destroys Voldemort. And
then,
yes, Snape, Professor Snape, kills Dumbledore. And Snape is the professor that Harry always disliked and had used to work for Voldemort. And so going into this book, what's that?
That happened in a previous book, though, didn't it?
Yeah, that happened in the last book. That's going straight into this book. So going into this book, the big debates were, who's going to die? Is Snape a good guy or a bad guy? Is Dumbledore going to stay dead? And so they had a lot of questions to answer, and they did a pretty good job of them. Obviously, I'm not going to go through the whole book, but Dumbledore is dead. He does not come back. He definitely talks to Harry and influences Harry, but he's dead. There's actually a lot of kind of Star Wars themes in these books. A lot. But I guess there's a lot of Star Wars themes everywhere, so they can kind of get away with that. Snape ends up being a good guy. He is loyal to Dumbledore, and it's kind of weird because you find out that Snape is looking after Harry because Snape was in love with his mother, and it's really kind of creepy because it's kind of like he was obsessed with her because his mother was married, and you know the whole thing about Harry was that his parents died and there was this weird connection between him and Voldemort, and you find out that Snape felt bad about his hand in that role, that his parents were killed and Snape couldn't prevent it because he was in love with his mother. So I wasn't too fond of that, but the book is called The Deathly Hallows, and what you find out is that the Deathly Hallows are three instruments, a powerful wand, Harry's invisible cloak, and a stone that can resurrect the dead. And there are three things that if one person obtains these three things, he becomes master of the dead almost. And you find out basically that Harry ends up getting all three of these possessions, even though he's not actually seeking them out like a normal wizard would. And that's kind of been like the whole thing with Harry, is that Harry is kind of the reluctant hero. You know, he doesn't want to do what he does, but he does it because he has to.
Right.
And so there are some, I mean, a lot of people died in this book. His owl dies. Dobby, his little house elf, dies.
Good.
Are you serious? I love Dobby. Dobby's a great character. Lupin and Tonks, who are two of the Dark Wizard Hunters, you know, they actually get married in the last book. You find out that they have a child in this book, and they make Harry the godfather, and then both of them die. And then one of the Weasley twins, I think it was Fred dies.
Oh, that's good.
So this was a pretty dark book. And you see the final battle between Harry and Voldemort, and J.K. Rowling is really good with showing you things that you should have seen all along, or they're showing you stuff, but how it all comes together at the end of every book. And you kind of see that, and they make it clear that Voldemort's dead, and Harry survives, and it was good. I mean, I'm not the most
series ended.
What's that?
You're happy with?
I'm happy with. I'm happy with the ending. They had an epilogue. Basically, it fast forwards 19 years, and you see that Harry, who was dating Ron's sister Jenny, is now married with Jenny, and they have a bunch of kids. And Ron marries Hermione, and they have some kids, and it basically ends with them taking their kids, and their kids are going to Hogwarts, and that's kind of it. The only thing about that is that it kind of makes Harry look like kind of like a housewife. It's because,
so
you know, Harry.
Go ahead and start working with.
Right, you always had an idea that Harry would either be like a Dark Wizard Hunter, which is what he wanted to be. Or that, like, he would be, like, the headmaster at Hogwarts or something. And they don't say that at all. You just see that. You see that he's happy and he's married. And he still has a scar, but a scar doesn't hurt. And so he's happy. But I kind of wanted a little bit more to see the evolution of what his character became. But overall, it's cool. Like, I'm probably not the most diehard Harry Potter fan. But I thought it was an amazing book. Like, there are some really moving parts in this book. Like, there's some rousing moments because there's a big war happening. Basically, the whole Hogwarts castle is basically destroyed, and there's just hundreds of wizards fighting. And, like, it's intense, and you're really caught up into it. And I'm really excited for the last two movies, and I think this will make an excellent movie. So, overall, I give a thumbs up.
Okay, cool. Well, this week we're doing a top five on TV shows that David and I get a little fanatical about. We're going to talk about our top five favorite TV shows that are currently on the air. So that kind of inherited the choices a little bit. So my number five pick was The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And this was a pick that I wouldn't have actually thought was one of my favorite TV shows without, if I didn't sit down and think about it. But this show, The Daily Show, this was something that's done, you know, don't let the comedy aspect fool you about it, because it is an actual news program, but it's done with such a sly wit, and for someone who, I can see a more conservative crowd not enjoying this show as much. But
oh, yeah.
For someone who's a little bit more laid back and liberal, that this show really kind of, it makes politicians, it shines a light on them that makes everything seem a bit more honest, because a lot of times, you know, you see politicians on news programs and you kind of get the feeling you're being screwed. The Daily Show actually calls these people on it. And
right,
so
they ask the questions that no one else will.
Exactly, and it's done in a comedy format, which really works. And Jon Stewart, he is by far and wide, like, he should always be broadcasting the news, I think, like, or in some kind of position like this, because he does great. Like, this was the role he was born for.
Right.
And so, yeah, this is where I was exposed to Lewis, which is comedians. If you haven't picked up America, the book, it's a fantastic book written by the Daily Show staff and writers. It's done as a history book of America in a textbook format, like you would have gotten back in school. And it's just hilarious. It's they put their same twist that they put on the current media onto historical events in American history, and it's fantastic.
Okay, well, my number five is nowhere near as serious as yours, although The Daily Show can't really be interpreted as serious, really. But my number five is a show that is a complete shadow of its former self, but it's still the first thing I watch every day when I get home. And that is Attack of the Show on G4.
I just can't stand this show anymore.
I know. Attack of the Show is, well, it used to be more of a tech show based solely on computers, video games, just tech in general, cell phones, anything tech. And it was great. It was actually hosted by the guys who do the Dig Nation podcast right now, which is Kevin Rose and Alex Albright. So if you're not watching Dig Nation, you should definitely check it out. It's an awesome show. But now it's hosted by Kevin Pereira and Olivia Munn. And it has its moments now. You know, it's definitely my number five because it used to be, like, one of my favorite shows. And now it's okay, but they still do some tech stuff. I think it's kind of like it had the more... The whole G4 network, which was the tech and video game network, I think it kind of did the whole MTV thing where... When they first started off, they did a lot of stuff about text, you know? But now it's all, like, trying to be funny. It's all sex and, you know, it used to be that they're going to tech shows, and now all of a sudden they're going to, like, the adult expo. And it's like, I don't really want to see that. But nevertheless, they still have some really good segments. You know, they're the only place you can watch E3 live, which is always great, and they always have really good, you know, commentary on the games coming out. And they do really, yeah, and they do a really good Comic-Con show, which, you know, Comic-Con is this week, it starts Thursday, and they do a live show from Comic-Con, so it's still one of my favorite shows, because basically it's the only way I can get this kind of information on the network, but it's just sad because it used to be such a better show than it is now, but that's my number five, Attack of the Show.
And it used to be hosted by the wonderful Sarah Lane.
Sarah Lane was basically every nerd's dream.
Yeah, she's fantastic. So my number four pick is How I Met Your Mother. And this is a show that I came on kind of late in the series. I didn't get exposed to right away, and I picked up the DVDs. And this show is genius. This kind of, after being bombarded with reality TV for so long, I was really missing just a good, funny sitcom. And this totally fills everything that I had.
Yeah, this is actually a funny show. I was surprised because you turned me on to this show, and I didn't think I'd like it, but you were right.
Yeah, it kind of follows a group of late 20s, early 30s, something-year-old crowd, and just through work and relationships, and basically it is the story of how one of the main characters meets his wife. And it's just a fantastic show. The chemistry between all the actors is great. Neil Patrick Harris, one of the best roles he's ever done. Like, I have never
seen
more in this show. And just really, really well done. It's kind of the same type of comedy that you might have seen back in Undeclared and stuff like that. There's a few different writers and different creators, but once in a while, a few of the old actors do show up on the show. It's just a really great ensemble comedy, so I really recommend it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have to give you props on that. My number four would have to be Smallville. Smallville started off awesome, and the first three seasons were just wonderful. It's one of those things where you got to see Clark Kent, you know, and what it'd be like if he was living in Smallville in, you know, the year 2000, and he had to learn with
Superman. Basically. Ultimate Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And it was cool, and they introduced some new characters, like Chloe, who is his news reporter friend, and it was all really cool, and you had the connection between him and Lana, and Michael Rosenbaum as Lex Luthor is amazing. Does a wonderful job. I think only second to the Lex on the Justice League Unlimited cartoon. But it lost some steam pretty quick within, like, I think the fourth and fifth season, where you had Lana becoming the ancestor of a witch and fighting Clark, and it got a little bit much. But this past season, it came back with a vengeance. They put Oliver Queen on the show, which I didn't think was going to be a great idea, but it turned out to be a great, great character, really well written. You had the Justice League episode with Cyborg, Impulse, Oliver Queen, Aquaman, and Clark. The season ended with the emergence of Bizarro, which I've never been a huge Bizarro fan, but I'm looking forward to it. And so I had pretty much given up on the show until this season, but now I'm really back on and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that was always a show that, during the season, the starting, the premiere was always good, during the middle, and the finale was usually always really, really good too. But you're right, this last season 6 was phenomenal.
Yeah, and then if you check our site right now, fanboystrikeback.com, you can see the picture of the new Supergirl who's going to be on the show.
But didn't they have her on, like, as a guest appearance in, like, one episode really quickly?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, is that she already made an appearance because... But I'm actually, you know, thinking back, I think it wasn't supposed to be her. I think it was, like, a trick that they were trying to place on Clark to get him back to Krypton or something. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of them throwing Kara into the show. I mean, the thing that you and I, Eric, have always expressed is that all we really want to see on the show is a young Bruce Wayne, because we've seen almost every other young character. We've seen a Bart Allen. We just wanted to see a young Clark Kent interact with a young Bruce Wayne, because it'd be awesome.
Yeah, that is a good show. My number three show is kind of... I don't know why, like, I'm still involved with this show. It's like an old girlfriend that I just keep going back to. The Simpsons.
And, really?
Yes. And you know,
I don't even know if people watch The Simpsons anymore.
They do. Like, and
well, I know they do. I know people have to, because it keeps going. But I haven't watched The Simpsons in years.
It's on. And, you know, I was thinking about that, too, when I was making up this list. The Simpsons is something that I watch every single week. I'm always there at that Sunday night Fox lineup. So,
really?
Yeah, and oddly enough, and I enjoy it. Like, has its moments that make me laugh. I will admit that ever since about season 10 or 11, it took a sharp downhill turn. But and there's kind of a nostalgia factor for it, because I started watching this when it was, and back when it was like a small sketch on the Tracy Ullman show. So it's,
yeah,
like, we kind of grew up with The Simpsons.
Right, yeah, and we were young when The Simpsons first came out.
Yeah, so it's kind of like just, I'm passionate. Like, what's going to happen when this show goes away? Like, the world without The Simpsons just doesn't feel right to me. But,
so you're excited for the movie?
I'm going to see that. I think it's going to be good. And the thing was, like, when Family Guy came out, everyone kind of said, well, this is going to be the new Simpsons, and it's, you know, it's a little bit pushing the edge further and stuff like that. I don't think they're going to be the next Simpsons. They don't have the staying power that The Simpsons constantly has. Because The Simpsons, they do push the envelope, but there's also a lot of heart in that show.
Right.
And the characters are just, at this point, they're really well developed. There's still a lot of comedy and a lot of shining moments the show has, and a lot of great writers have come out of the show as well. So I'm still really happy with it. That's my number three.
All right. Yeah, I didn't know. I knew people still watch The Simpsons. I didn't know who. So I guess it's you, Eric.
We're out there. Like the X-Files.
My number three is a little show called Lost.
I knew that was
What's that?
I knew you were going to pick that.
I had to. Okay, now, I will be the very first one to admit that this past, the third season of Lost, was not good. And that killed me, because how I started watching Lost was actually really weird, because I never watched the show at all, its first season. I had heard that it was like this really mysterious and really cool show, but I never ever watched it. And then right before the second season premiered, they had an hour recap show, which in that hour recap show, they basically tell you everything that happened in the first season. And it was kind of weird because the whole lore of the Lost is the fact that there's all these mysteries. And so basically, I had most of them ruined because I just watched this show that was just basically an hour full of spoilers. But nonetheless, I was like really intrigued by it. So I went out that day, I bought the DVDs, and I stayed up till like 5 o'clock in the morning the next like 3 nights watching these DVDs, and I was just hooked on this show. I mean, the way that this show is shot, the writing, it's an amazing show. And so season 2 kept on going, and it was great. It just kept on, you know, there's more and more questions. They gave some answers, and, you know, this past season, it got way out of control with, you know, asking more and more questions, not giving any answers. And they kind of, I think, got the hint towards the end of this last season. They started giving a lot of answers. You know, I'm optimistic for the end of the show. I don't know. I don't like how they're doing it because they're basically doing 24 episodes, which would normally be one season, I think, and they're going to split it up into 2 separate seasons, and they're going to only air it from January to like March. And I think basically the schedule of it's killing the show, but I'm really excited to see how it's going to end. So that's my number 3 is Lost.
Okay. My number 2 show is Heroes, and this show is Lost is David Heroes is to me. I got into this show, and going into it, I saw the commercials for it, and I was like, this is going to be either really good at it, and even if it's really good, no one's going to watch it. It's going to last like 4 episodes. I was just really happy that this show caught on, and it has a really action-packed pace that keeps going, but also a lot of character development. The only negative aspect that I would say about this show is they might have too many characters, which is something that I think they're rectifying within the next season. Is they don't use the same batch every, and that was painfully evident when a lot got in the first season. Like, you kind of got emotionally invested in some of them, and then there were some pretty surprising deaths.
Right.
And, it takes that whole comic book aspect show, and kind of an X-Men theme in the real world is these people develop powers, and they don't know what's happening to them, and they're scared, they're on the run, and there's a lot of that kind of pace during the show. And also the cliffhangers on the show were just astounding. This was one of those shows where I just could not wait for the next week to come around to watch this. So
that's true.
The DVDs of season 1 come starting up next season, and it's going to have the regular show, but then there's also going to be kind of a mini-series to be introducing new characters, and some of those new characters will be introduced into the main series. So I really enjoy how they have a comic book aspect of it, where they have cuts, and then they at the end of the season, they say, like, end of volume 1, beginning of volume 2, and then there's kind of a mini-series and stuff like that. So kind of a treat for us fanboys, but also anyone can really get into this if you start from the beginning of the story. Like, watch the DVD, because otherwise it's going to be pretty hard. But, like, once you start at that point, it's a gripping, gripping show.
Yeah, it's a great show. All right, my number 2, I'm really hoping it's your number 1, because I haven't heard you say it yet, but my number 2 is The Office.
Yeah, that is my number 1.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah, I don't know exactly what I could say about this show to really give it justice. Like Eric said about How I Met Your Mother, you know, I was really sick and tired of reality shows, and I thought, like, the sitcom was dead. And then came along The Office, and I've never like thought a show was so funny than this show. And I own the DVDs, and I have all the season 3 on my DVR. And honestly, I think I almost watch an episode of the show a day, and I never get tired of the show.
This is a show where the cast is so well put together.
Yeah.
I didn't think so initially, but like the more you watch the show and get involved with all the separate characters in The Office, they are hilarious, and it is really one of those shows that you just can't get tired of. It's
right,
fantastic.
And I think that's where it shines, is that they have Steve Carell, who is the main character, obviously, and, you know, Steve Carell's a great actor, he's hilarious. The way he has, I don't know, such a different sense of humor, especially with the way he's portrayed on the show, that just really works. But what really makes The Office, and what makes it a breakout show is that every single character on the show is funny. And it doesn't matter, like, how small of a role that they have, they play that role perfectly. Like, if you are an Office fan, most likely when you go up to someone and you ask them who's their favorite character, everyone has a different character. And that's something you don't really see in a lot of shows.
Yeah, so, it's true.
I love the show. It's hilarious. You know, I'm kind of worried about it because I know that the ratings haven't been great. Downloads on iTunes have really, really helped the show. So I'm hoping that, you know, it really keeps going. But I doubt it would be on the air for that much longer anyway. But I'm really excited about the show. I love it. I do not like Jim choosing Pam over Karen because Karen's way cooler and way hotter. But we'll see how it goes. I think Ryan becoming the boss is going to be awesome, and I'm really excited for it.
Yes, the show came out of left field. Jake and I gave me the DVDs one weekend, and I sat and watched the whole thing, and it was just fantastic. And anyone who works in an office, even though the situations are kind of outlandish, you can you really get a feel like that you can relate to some of these characters just with some of the politics that goes on between them. There's a stereotype for a lot of people who a lot of people work, and this show just nails it. And it's the peripheral characters that really, really drive this shit, though. John Krasinski does a great job as, but really the characters around him, the supporting cast, are fantastic. I cannot give them enough props on that. And this has a very strong fan base. I wouldn't say the largest fan base, but it has a very strong and vocal fan base. So
right,
I think
right.
that's keep it going a little while longer, but I don't expect it to be going on for years and years, which is sad. But this is really a show you could jump on at any point. If you want to go buy the DVDs or just start next season, it'll be very easy to get caught up to speed. There's not a huge amount of story, but it's very self-contained. There's a little bit of an underlying story, but you can get caught up to that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that's my number one.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think, especially for us, I mean, we're not doing genres, and so I think our number one and our number two, since they're kind of reversed, they're both our number one. I mean, it'd basically be our number one drama and our number one comedy show. But, yes, my number one is definitely Heroes. Just like you said, Eric, I remember Heroes exactly 1 year ago when they premiered it at Comic-Con. There's a lot of buzz surrounding it, and I was like, and you know, you heard that people like Jeff Loeb were writing it, and I was like, watch, you know, this show is going to be awesome, it's going to be well-written, but no one's going to watch it, and it's going to get canceled after, like, 4 episodes. And it actually did the exact opposite. This show blew up and basically saved NBC, which wasn't doing very well at the time. But this show became just a phenomenon. It was amazing. It was everywhere.
Yeah, save the cheerleader, save the world. Like, that's a part of the public lexicon now. So
yeah, definitely. It became, like, the pop culture thing. And, you had these wonderful, wonderful characters, and it was kind of hard because, yeah, like Eric said, there was a lot of characters, and they kind of managed them well, but it was kind of a lot to take in. But you had this grand story that the whole time you knew was going somewhere, and, like, right from the beginning, they let you know that, like, there's going to be, like, a beginning and an end to this season, and we're going to take you from point A to point B. And, like, we want you hanging to see what's going to happen. And just like you said, Eric, like, every single episode that ended just had this cliffhanger where you just so wanted more. And, you know, Eric and I would literally call each other every Monday night as soon as the episode ended, and we just had to talk about it because we couldn't get enough of the show. So, you know, we'll probably be mixing in some Heroes reviews, definitely, once the show comes back on. But, you know, if you haven't caught up, definitely go check out the DVDs. You know, they have some great special effects for a TV show, and you had Siler, who was one of the best villains I've seen, period. So
one of the sheer creepiest sound effects. A very simple sound effect, but used horrifyingly.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's he was so just disturbing. And I'm so happy that the show did well and that it's getting a lot of respect, because then, you know, it transfers over. You know, this is the kind of thing that's going to really help people see that comic books, you know, should be more respected. And it's going, you know, this is like one of those the shows where, like, it definitely gets its base from the comic book world, but it's going to appeal to everyone. So, you know, if you have someone and they're going to not watch the show because they don't like superheroes, it doesn't matter. They're still going to love the show. All right, well, that sums up our top five current TV shows. If you have any feedback or comments, questions, your top five, please email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com. You can also check out our website, fanboystrikeback.com. You know, you can leave your comments there. We have the picture of the new Supergirl that will be up soon. And then also there's links to our forum. If you have any questions, any concerns, if you want to talk about what your favorite book was this week, definitely go to our forum. You can start your own thread and start posting there. And we also have a MySpace, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback, and a comic space, comicspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. So I think that's it for this week. I'm David.